The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, 12th day of July, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow down 34 points, S&P down 8, comp down 30, gold off by $8. The NASDAQ has fallen 4% in the past 5 sessions. The European Central Bank last night, the ECB, cut their overnight rate to 0%. And the purpose of that is to encourage the banks to actually loan the money that they've been given from these stimulus funds instead of just playing it safe and, you know, sticking it back in the ECB overnight and earning, you know, a little bit of interest. So we'll see how that plays out. The effect it's had on the markets early on was quite negative, as you can see. Steady move down, finally got a turnaround, and we've pushed right back up to that weekly trading zone. Let me jump over here to an hourly chart. As you recall, we had said we like the idea of being short below 1340 earlier in the week. We finally got below it. First drop was 9.5, second drop was 10, and then the third drop, 20 points. So far, okay, we'll see how it reacts off the 28-29. We do still have one final zone below us for the week, and we still have one trading day. Our last tweet on the Dow also, to be short below 12,615, gave us an initial 72-point drop, followed up by a 165-point drop. And with that, Michael has to go, so I'm going to go ahead and just switch this over to him really quick. Let him run through the recap. We have a very special guest that is going to be on the show tomorrow. I'm going to tell you who it is, what it's all about, why it's important, why it's a really big deal. And I'm also going to go over last night's blog post with you last night, because that's really important and that's really a big deal. Michael, go ahead.
All right. Let me just grab the charts. Here we go. Yeah, we've had a nice move here, and you know, during the break. Remember before we used to have nice moves during the break all the time?
Yes.
Well, we had a nice move during the break.
Funny you should mention that. Having a nice move during the break. I won't go any further. Just
okay. All right. All right. I'll just let that one go. All right. Here we go. Let's start the recording up. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday. Thursday, July 12th, 2012. Before I get too far into this, let me remind everyone, if you have not taken the free trial can be taken at www.cfrn.net/apply. If you have taken the free trial, or if you're on the free trial, there is a partners meeting tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. 9 p.m. Eastern Time partners meeting. If you want to be in the partners meeting, you need to become a partner, okay? That's a reminder for all the partners. There is a partners meeting tonight. If you want to be in the partners meeting and you're on the free trial, you need to become a partner. If you don't know how, send an email to support@cfrn.net, and we will get all the information out to you as soon as possible. All right. All right, this morning, let's start out with the results. I'm down two trades on the YM, so I'm down 16 ticks on the YM. I am just about break-even on the NQ. I'm down two ticks on the NQ. That's close enough to break-even. And I'm up four ticks on the ES. Those are the results for today. I'm break-even on the crude. All right. Now, I took a bunch of trades on the NQ, so let me start with that one. Okay. That is where I took more trades than anywhere else. I missed this one here. Now, the way the trade setup works, guys, is you get a bearish cross like this one right here. Okay, the MA1 down below the BBC, pull back up and test to the BBC. From there, you look for a down close and divergence between the green line here and the cycle portion. All right, you look for that. We got that down close with the divergence, and price went down. It actually went down quite a bit before we got our next opportunity. Right here, it dropped down. Again, we had a bearish cross. The MA1 down below the BBC, a pullback up and test to the BBC with a down close, and we had some bearish divergence here. I took that short, and I made, I don't remember how many ticks I made on that, but I did make some profit on this one. I did the same thing over here. I took this short, and it stopped me out to the tick, and then it went down. All right, over here, same thing, guys. It was just a big short day here. I did it again over here, and I took a little bit of profit right here. Right here, everything switched around, and I tried to go long. I lost on that long trade, and I lost on that long trade. I should have just stopped taking long trades at that point. Well, I considered stopping taking long trades at that point. But then the next long trade right here, you see now we have the bullish divergence right here. We have a bullish cross, a test to the BBC with an up close. That one worked out. Then I jumped on this one, and I took that one. That one worked out. That was my last trade this morning. Now, the one that I just referenced a minute ago when I said during the break was right here. You see we have all this bullish divergence right here. After a bullish cross, a test to the BBC, right there, with an up close, and there it goes. All right, over here right now, we have a bearish cross, test to the BBC, and a down close with a little bit of bearish divergence right there. Now, for those of you guys who were in the partners meeting last week, right here, the green turned down, the brown is below a downtrending cycle, so you could have shorted this right up here. Okay, you could have gotten short right up there. And that was the morning on the NQ. All right, those were the trades that I took, and that was my morning on the NQ. Now, on the YM, let's look at this one. My very first trade of the morning, we had bearish cross, a test of the BBC, and a down close. Now, when I entered this trade, the cycle had started moving up, so it wasn't the best trade because the cycle had started to move up, but I shorted it. It stopped me out for minus 8 ticks. I got into this trade over here. It gave me about 7 ticks profit. Same reason as this one. I got into this one. Gave me about 7 ticks profit, and then it stopped me out. All right, I missed this trade. There was one right here going in the opposite direction. Okay. There was a trade right there. And there was one over here. When we got the bearish cross, pull back up, tested the BBC, and a down close with the bearish divergence. Now, if I'd gotten that one and that one, we'd have been break-even on the YM right there. I did take this one. I got a break-even trade on that. I took this one. I also took break-even on that. I took this one and stopped out, unfortunately. And that was the last trade of the morning on the YM right there. Now, again, the green was turning into the brown, which was below a downsloping cycle right here. You see, so you could have shorted right there and taken some profit on that. You could have gone long right there and taken some profit. This is all the same stuff that I was showing you guys last week in the partners meeting. Okay? And if you want, we can review it again tonight in tonight's partners meeting. But right here, the green turned up. Brown's above an upsloping cycle for the move up. Okay? And that was the YM this morning. All right. Let's see, scrolling back here on the ES this morning. Well, we took a few trades, you can see here on the ES. We took a short right here, pull back up, tested the BBC, we shorted it right there. Once it started to hang up here at the MA1, we took a point profit, okay? Then it dropped down right here, it pulled back up to the BBC, we shorted this one. We didn't short this one, I don't remember why we didn't short this right in here, I don't remember why we didn't short that right in there, but we didn't. And this one right here we did short, and it stopped us out for minus 2 points. Then we got a bullish cross. Price came right here, and we took a long trade right here. Obviously, you can see the long trade gave us 2 points, and that was at the end of the morning session. There was another opportunity right here to take another 2 points. Now, this morning when I was in this trade here, I said, now what we anticipate is this green line working its way up to the cycle. All right, it gave us 2 points, and it pulled back down to the BBC, and now you can see it's finally worked its way back up to the cycle. And we also happen to be right at the weekly trading zone right there. Okay? And that was the ES for us this morning. Now, I want to do the crude oil, even though I didn't take any trades. Well, I took one trade. It was a break-even for me. But I'll show you the crude. This was the trade. No, that wasn't the trade that I took. There was one trade that I took on the crude, and I got a break-even on it. That might have been it right there. No, that wasn't it. Anyway, I think this was it over here, right around 10 o'clock. I went long on the crude. It came back down and stopped me out at break-even. But we're doing the same exact thing here, guys. We're looking for the bearish cross of the MA1 below the BBC. You see, the MA1 below the BBC. Test of the BBC and a down close, and down it goes. All right. Let's see. Nothing in there. It seems I was marking them up as they were happening here. So we had bullish divergence here. You see? We had a bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence down here in the bottom. And it went up. Now we had a bearish cross, tested the BBC, bearish divergence, and a down close. Over here. Bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence. Okay, you guys see the bullish divergence here, right? That one actually happened a couple of times here on the way up. Okay, tested the BBC again, up close, bullish divergence. Over here, we didn't actually pull back far enough to test it. In here, tested the BBC with an up close. That was pretty much it for the morning session right there. You see we lost the divergence over here, and the MA1 is above the BBC here, and we lost the divergence. There was one last opportunity here on the short side, where we had a bearish cross, a test of the BBC, and then a down close, and we had bearish divergence right there, and right there again. All right, and that was the end of the morning session. Now, you can see right over here, more bullish divergence, test of the BBC with an up close. This was during the break, okay? These are the opportunities I was talking about during the break. That was the only opportunity during the break. Okay. And that, my friends, is it. Does anyone have any questions about any of this? I am happy to answer any questions. All right. A reminder to everyone. If you are in here on a free trial and you want to become a partner but you don't know how, you should check your email because I sent you an email. But if you can't find the email that I sent to you, then send us an email, a quick email at support@cfrn.net. Just put partner info in the subject, and I will send off all the information you need to become a partner prior to the partners meeting tonight. Okay? Here on the NQ and on the YM, guys, we have bearish divergence right here right now, and it's pulling back up to test the BBC. It already did it over here on the YM. In bearish divergence, it tested the BBC and gave a down close right there. Right here, actually. Okay? The MA1 seems to be holding right here, so just be cognizant of that. Okay? And that is it. All right. Okay, I have stopped the recording. Let's see. All right. If there are no questions, you know what? I'm going to take a minute here and go over one other thing. This is the ES4 tick range. Now, here on the 10,000 contract, there was one opportunity on this move up, about two opportunities on the move up to get long. Here on the 4-tick range, you will see there was one right here, and it just tested the BBC again right there. And on the way down this morning, there was an opportunity to short right here, where over here, that was in this period right here, where there was no opportunity to short. Okay, so the ES can be traded just like all the other markets, with the divergences and same exact indicator set, you see, right here. And right there. So if the larger time frame just seems to start running and it doesn't give you an opportunity to enter, you can drop down to a smaller time frame. You know, this was yesterday afternoon. You can drop down to a smaller time frame, and you'll usually have an opportunity on the smaller time frame to get into that. Okay? I just wanted to point that out because I know we have a new partner who asked that question the other day. And there it is. All right. Right now on the NQ, we're testing the BBC, and we have some bearish divergence right there. Okay. Same bearish divergence over here on the YM. We actually have bullish divergence on the ES, but we're not going to go long into a weekly trading zone. And that is that. I don't see any questions popping up in here, but the recording is complete. All right, let me see. Richard. Just scrolling down the list of things in here. All right. There is where you would have shorted this on the down close right there on the NQ. Right there is where you would have shorted that. And right over here is where you would have shorted the YM. 8 ticks risk on either one of these trades. As a matter of fact, I've changed so that I have 8 ticks risk on every trade that I take now. Okay, look for the close below the MA1 right here, and the close below the MA1 right here. If that happens, it should at least get down to the swing low, which is right here. I know it's not too far, but right here on both of those trades. Okay.
Did you say something about questions?
I did. I said nobody's typed any in here.
Oh, are you ready to? Did you want me to start the show?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Oh my gosh! No, kidding. All right, no questions.
I went on a little farther about stuff because I think your mic was off.
Nobody knows. I was just sitting here making you squirm. Oh. So. You did
okay,
good.
Well, that's good. Everybody just got to see a couple of trades here happen. There's the short right here is now working. You can see it's gone down at least to the swing low. It should go down even lower than that. Watch for the green line right here to get down into the cycle portion of the slingshot. Same thing over here on the YM. All right. The entry was right there. Look for this green line to get down into the cycle portion of the slingshot. Okay. The ES is right at the BBC with bullish divergence. Make you want to remove your risk or maybe lock in a little bit of profit on these trades. Mike Reed is in the house. That's good. And that's it. That's a wrap for me. I am stopped the recording now. All right. One more quick reminder for everyone. Partners meeting tonight. All right. Hey, Mike. I hear you. I know you're there.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
How you doing?
Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Dwayne. How you doing?
Good, man. Good to have you with us. It's been a while.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Things just came up here and there and everywhere, so... But I'm here today. Quite a move down. Where to go here? Yesterday, I guess we, yesterday with the, they had a gap up open. And, on the daily chart, they just missed filling a gap, that was at 1257. They reached 1256 and a half. That was our resistance area yesterday, and they turned, I think, in the first, was it 6 minutes in? And then we went down to see. We had support. That might have been 2 days ago. I'm kind of confused here. Yesterday we had support at 1328.5 to 28. And they weren't just one below that by a tick. And we had a decent bounce back into the close. And things were kind of looking like we could get a move going to the upside, but that was vanquished overnight. And let's see. So far today we had support at 1318.5, and that's the last key area, I think, in front of there's 1312 and then there's 1303, 1302, and those would be the last two spots down below. But I think this is just off the lows. We're kind of just getting an oversold bounce that might last a little bit longer, but they have to get back over for me to start thinking that we have more than just a bounce and a downtrend here to get back over 1333 area and then not turn right back down again. They'd have to get back above, I think, 1333 and hold up there to get turned around. I have proof of some sort of a low might be in place. So,
well, we were waiting for that 28-29 yesterday when the Fed notes came out, and we got it right down to our zone almost. I think we got one tick inside of it, and then a very nice about face right back up to that 1340 area.
Okay. Yeah.
And then overnight, with all going on in Europe and the ECB taking their lending rate to zero, which will encourage banks to actually spend their stimulus money or loan their stimulus money and not just hoard it overnight to get, a quarter of a point of interest. It's taken a toll on the market. Although the market has, tried to recover here in the last 2 hours, this 28-29 that we were looking at yesterday to be support, which in fact it was. In fact, over here we got within a point and a half, and we made the rally, and then this time we hit it, made the rally, And then even when we spiked it early on before the European session opened, we rallied off of it again, got below it, came back, printed this nice doji, sold off all the way down to the lows here at 1975, and now we've bounced right back up to it again. But I don't see us getting above that today. Now we may, and if we do, we do. It's just what happens. But I think this should become some pretty good resistance. And we do have one final zone down below, 1307, 1308. And we do still have one trading day left in the week.
Yeah.
I think you said you had a number down there around 1302 or something.
Yeah. You kind of split between. There's one at 13, at 12, and then 02. So.
So you got one. You got one at 13.012 as well. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So 4 points and 4 points, which is kind of a normal swings, but.
Now, Mike, you have started to put the power of Twitter to work for your company as well, correct? TradeStalker.com.
Right. Quite a few updates during the day. I just have. The Twitter open and the voice software so I can speak in there and give a lot of updates on new dynamic support and trend and which direction we want to be trading in. And
now you actually like the voice software in Windows 7 better than Dragon Naturally Speaking. Is that correct?
No. Not anymore.
You changed.
That was the way it was with the other PC. But once you get Dragon trained, and I don't have it, I have to go back and retrain it. But once it's pretty well trained, it's done a really bang up job. The only issue I had was with my antivirus with Kaspersky at one time caused an issue. But
the Dragon I didn't even make it through the training process. I just. Gave it up.
Yeah.
But
okay. Yeah.
But I'm glad to hear that. I mean, everyone raves about how well it performs, and so I was surprised initially when you said that you liked the built-in voice software in Windows 7 better. But now, it is natural.
Well, it's 6 of 1, 6 of 2 of the other, I think, because it's a lot easier to go through all the setup and training through Microsoft.
Right.
Dragon is, like you said, kind of cumbersome, but if you like wanted to learn your speech, just take something that you've written and go through and you can train it that way pretty easily to learn your speech pattern. It's, trying to follow your, not word by word, but basically phrases, and it learns the way you speak. The more you speak to it, so.
Well, I bring up Twitter because Twitter has indeed become the de facto medium for disseminating information of all types, from news to inspirational quotes to jokes to top secret government messages to revolutionary messages that topple top secret governments. Is it a toy? Is it a weapon? Is it a business tool? Well, that's the beauty of the Twitter, because it's all of those things and even more in 140 characters or less. It actually forces you to be creative, because you have to figure out how to say whatever it is you want to say in 140 characters or less, and it makes you realize that sometimes, at least for me, how wordy I can be. I'll sit and type in a tweet, and it'll go, you've exceeded the limit by 360 characters. You'll have to be more clever than that. So, okay. So I go to work. Now, Twitter's powerful, but we have to keep it in proper perspective, because at its most basic level, it is nothing more than a pipeline for information. Now, it's a pipeline that's powerful enough to push information from the mundane to mission critical in front of thousands, even millions of eyeballs in the blink of an eyeball. When Gutenberg first created movable type, and when our forefathers framed the Constitution, freedom of the press was, at best, a noble idea. Very few people could actually afford a printing press back in the day. And I think most of us in this listening audience can even remember our school teachers hand cranking out our homework assignments with purple fingers on a state-of-the-art contraption called the mimeograph machine. Do you remember those, Mike?
I barely, maybe from my dad's day.
I remember when I was in elementary school, we had the mimeograph machine. There was no photocopiers.
Yeah, there weren't any of those.
No, those didn't come along.
Yeah, they did do something like that. It was like carbon paper.
Yeah, it was a mess. And they would stand there and they would hand crank that thing and it would grind them out. Well, Twitter came along, and it was created in March of 06 by a gentleman named Jack Dorsey, which you probably didn't know. Probably no one knew that. You would think someone who created something that is so widely used that his name would be a household word, but who's Jack Dorsey? Quite honestly, I don't know. But it was in March of 2006 that he created Twitter. The service today has over 500 million active users. Those users generate over 340 million tweets per day. And their servers handle over 1.6 billion search queries per day. That's a whole lot of tweeting going on. I got to thinking about it last night because we've been using it for quite a while. And so I did a little research on myself. And I wasn't sure exactly when I joined Twitter. Here's the power of the internet. If you want to know something, just Google it. So I Googled, when did I start tweeting? And it told me that I should go to whendidyoujointwitter.com. And here's what it told me. I joined Twitter on August the 18th of 2007. Here's what happens, guys, when you go to that address. I'll open it in a new tab here. When did you join Twitter? You simply put in your Twitter handle. And there you go. August the 18th, 2007. Now, since it was all very new, I saw no real purpose in it or a future for it. In fact, I kind of made fun of it on the radio on more than one occasion. And my first infamous tweet, because I had no idea what to say. I had no idea if anyone was listening or if anyone would hear what I tweeted. So I said, watching TV with Gabe, my son. That was at 2300 hours, military time, on August the 18th of 2007, the day that I joined. And then I think I probably went a year or close to it before I tweeted again. Little did I imagine that 5 years and 2,752 tweets later, I would actually be using this odd little thing to help traders around the world earn a living. I thought it was silly, and I didn't think it would catch on. Fast forward 5 years, and I think I finally get it. Now, the power of Twitter is only as good or as valuable as the information that's tweeted. If you go out there and just start searching around, there's serious stuff, and there's funny stuff, and as I said, inspirational stuff, and there's obscene stuff. So, you got to watch your kids around the Twitter. If you follow our Twitter feed, you'll get ideas, links, breaking news, thought-provoking articles, and yes, even E-mini futures trades. On our public Twitter feed, you don't see everything that goes out to the partners, but we give away quite a bit. Now, here's the conundrum on what we give away for free. Having the information and knowing how to trade it are two entirely different things, as different as Bush and Obama, night and day, peace and war. So why do we give that information away? Well, because some people are clever enough to use it anyway, and it also serves as a gentle invitation to the rest of the trading world to apply for our free trial. Is that a shameless plug? Yes, it is. Click here and apply for our free trial. Because once you take the free trial, you might consider becoming a partner. And we would love nothing more than to have you become a part of our community of believers who trade for a living. Now, what I really like about Twitter, because when you go out to websites, now, Mike, if I go to your website and you have something posted there, I know you. I know you're a man of integrity. I know that whatever I see on your website, I can actually trust. If you say, I told my subscribers on such and such a day to take such and such a trade or to, you know, use this number, I don't doubt it. I mean, there's no question in my mind whatsoever that you, again, are a man of integrity. However, when you go out on the internet at large, you don't know. You see photoshopped brokerage statements and everything, you know, nine ways to Sunday, people trying to pull the wool over your eyes. But with Twitter, you've got a public timestamp. You can't fake it. You can't alter it. It serves as an actual representation of, in our case, what we believe to be the next best possible trade. The independent third-party Twitter timestamps it, archives it, and you don't have to wonder if that's what somebody really said at a certain time, okay? Because they don't have control over the timestamp, only the information. Now, our Twitter, we've done some really amazing things with the Twitter, but it's not a holy grail indicator. The title of the blog last night, Twitter, the Holy Grail Trading Indicator, which, by the way, if you Google Holy Grail Trading Indicator, we rank number one for that somehow, but go figure. I'm going to show you a couple of quick examples, and I went only back as far as the 17th of June because it's very time consuming to do this kind of stuff, to go find it, track it down, chart it. But on the 17th of June, we said consider selling 1338 on a stop. And I use some of your lingo right there, Mike. Consider this a 3 to 4 point scalp unless proven otherwise. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, sort of.
I learned that from you, my friend.
Okay, lingo.
And where did it go? It went from 1338 all the way down on this particular move to, it looks like, about 28 or maybe even 27. The next tweet was to sell 5375 on a stop, and that dropped 7.75 points on the day that I snapped this picture. I just went and pulled some of these pictures right off of previous blog posts. The next one, consider being short below 1342. That was a really nice 20-point decline. On this one, sell it 1323 on a stop. We had an initial move here that took us down to 1318. And then the next move took us from 23 all the way down to 1306. The next one on the 3rd of July, consider selling the ESU2 1374 limit. Now, most of the tweets are on a stop. This one was on a limit. And this tweet went out 2 days before it got triggered. But there it comes. Ran right up to 1375, weekly zone. Triggered the 1374 limit. And although this chart only shows a 17-point drop, if you go back And that should say 7-4. As you can see, the tweet went out on the 3rd. On the 4th, it was one day ahead of time. This should say 7-4-12. If you go look at your chart where it pulls back to 1374, we've done nothing but go down since. We're currently trading 1327. So a really nice move down from 74. The next tweet was to consider being short on the Dow E-mini futures below 12685. We got a 60-point drop off of that move. And then our next tweet was to be short below 1340. This came out 2 days before it actually triggered. We got a 9.5-point drop, a 10-point drop, a 14-point drop. And then consider being short the Dow below 12615. Trading's risky. Use a hard stop. That tweet gave up 72 points on the first move, 165 points on the second move. People always ask, can I trade the number a second time? And my answer is always the same. Important numbers are almost always tested and are important areas, however you want to look at it. And we see that over and over, just like on this trade here. It broke, it bounced, it bounced. And so, here's the question. Did I cherry-pick trades over the past month? Now, this only goes from June 17th. Is that correct? The first one that I posted, June 17th, up through our most recent tweet. So, actually, a little less than a month. Did I cherry-pick trades just to show you good results on the blog post? Yes. I purposely left out one tweet that didn't do as well as we had hoped. Why did I do that? Why would I throw out the one that didn't work? Because I would like to encourage you to go dig around and find it. Because if you're not willing, not you, Mike, but to those in the audience, if you're not willing to put forth at least that much effort, your chance of succeeding as a trader is somewhere between slim and none. We are required to say by law that trading is risky and you can lose all your money. I like to go a step further and say trading is not easy, but it can be simple. Now, our last swing trade that went out to the partners told them to be short 1355 on a stop July 5th at 10:22 a.m. Eastern Time. That trade has moved in our favor. So that's been really good. So did I put this up to brag about how great we are, you know, picking trades, putting them on the Twitter? Well, you know, I guess maybe a little. But really, I want you to see this is the information that we're giving away every single day almost, you know, when there's a trade to be had. And so if we give that away, how much more could be gained if you actually became a partner and better understood how to take advantage of these opportunities and turn them into trades? I know that a lot of people, and Mike, you get this, and I want you to comment on this. People sign up for your service, and what they really want is they don't want to learn how to trade. They figure if they pay you a few bucks that you should just kind of wire money into their account. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah.
I mean,
pretty much.
Wait a minute. No, no, no. I paid you X number of dollars. I should not have to work for a living now. Does that boggle your mind?
It does.
Tell people that trading is work. Could you? Because I say it sometimes.
Yeah, folks.
Could you say it?
Yeah. Roll up your sleeves and get them dirty and get your hands dirty. It's work. It's. Yeah. I don't just show up in front of the screen and say, let's go.
Now, you're hearing this from Mike Reed, TradeStalker.com, a guy who's been trading now for, was it, almost 30 years?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Before we had all these fancy charts and before we had Twitter, we were still using the mimeograph machine, I think, back then. Or maybe there were photocopiers, I don't know. But you were hand-drawing your charts, is that not correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, well, you can see them on the website.
If you go to Mike's website, you can actually see some hand-drawn charts.
Yeah, even they were a little bit yellowed by the time they got a picture taken of them. So they're from the early 80s, I believe. Mid-80s.
Are you going to do any more trading camps this year, Mike?
Yes, I hope to do one here, let's see, within a few months, in the fall. So.
Now, I want to remind you guys that Mike does something very unique in that he has an unlimited free trial. Our free trial is limited to a week. You can come in for 1 week, see everything we do live in real time, and then we kick you to the curb unless you want to become a partner. Mike, on the other hand, has an unlimited free trial. His is a little bit different. You get his newsletter the following day. It's the exact same newsletter that goes out to his subscribers. I can vouch for that. And you're able to watch the numbers he calls the night before. He tells you his game plan. You know, if the market opens here, this is what we're going to do. If it opens here, if it goes here, this is how we're going to trade off of that. So you can go to his website right now, TradeStalker.com. You can sign up for the free trial, and then you'll get an email every day after the fact, okay, that shows you exactly what the subscribers got. Mike's product is extremely affordable, one of the most affordable on the Internet. I highly recommend it. However, you're going to find yourself in a bit of a conundrum because you'll have some incredible information, and unless you know how to use it properly, you might pull a Barney Fife and shoot yourself in the foot. So while you're at his site, check out his book, Read the Greed, Take the Money, and also Read the Greed Live, which is his DVD course. You do still have that for sale, correct?
Yes, we do, John.
Okay, I know at one point you had run out of copies, but you reprinted.
Okay,
so you got inventory. Check that out, guys, because, again, just like I showed you with the Twitter feed, everybody in the world had access to every one of those tweets. In fact, all 2,752 tweets that we've put out on our public Twitter feed over the last however long we've been tweeting trades, a couple years, everybody's had access to it, but only a handful of people have actually taken advantage of it and been able to trade it. Because, Mike, you might know of a better way of saying it, but having the knowledge is one thing, and David brings this up a lot. In fact, David, I apologize for leaving you hanging after we surprised you yesterday by coming early, but we'll get to David here in just 1 second. But, Mike, your take on that, I mean, having somebody can tell you the exact high and low of today's trading before the market opens, and you can still get it wrong, right?
It can still be messed up somehow, yep.
It doesn't seem
possible,
the
analysis,
but,
they're two separate things, and you have to kind of be you have to be good at both. So, I think like David says, it's two separate things. Trading the forecast, putting his forecast together, and trading the forecast, maybe two different things, and that's the same, you know, same thing with me. With my work, I may have a certain thing I'm looking for, but something might, on days, get in the way where I don't, I miss the trade, or I don't, or the trade gets away from me before I can get on board the ideal spot or whatnot. But yeah, you have to kind of separate the two.
Mike, I know you're going to have to run in just a minute, but I want to bring David on, let him say hi to you, and I also want you to hear who our special guest is going to be tomorrow, because I think it's somebody you'll want to tune in and hear. So don't go away, guys. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
You think we don't need you now, we own your way.
I guess at this point, it's more like good afternoon.
It's getting close to that.
I'm sorry for keeping you waiting so long there after we ambushed you yesterday and came on early. So.
Well, that's all right. I'm
We wanted to give you time to stretch.
What's that?
We wanted to give you time to stretch.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, I had a whole week off to stretch, so I'm back. Anyway, so good morning to you. Good morning to everybody out there.
Mike Reed is here with us. He just wanted to say
Michael,
hi.
Michael, how are you? Good morning.
Hi, David. Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. I have a few minutes here, so
I just wanted to
hang on until
before
I
you
say
take
hello
off,
to you.
Mike. Let me say that we have a very special guest tomorrow. Barack Hussein Obama will be here to speak with David Williams.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
That was pretty funny.
I have
funny
a few things I'd like to say to him. I promise I'll be kind.
Oh,
yeah. No, actually, the guy that's going to be on tomorrow is James Catullus, and I'm sure I said that wrong, and I apologize, James, if you're tuned in. This is him, young fellow, and he is defending the clients of MF Global and now also PFG Best. And there's a very interesting story about him here on this website. On tonight's blog post, I will link both to this article that tells, give you a little background information on this guy. He has been working around the clock to try to recoup, you know, funds for the clients of both MF Global and now PFG Best. And he has a website, commoditycustomercoalition.org. I'll also put that link. I'll put it here in the chat room, and I'll also put it on the blog tonight. They had a public conference call yesterday afternoon, which I wasn't aware of at the time, and I missed. I wish I had listened to that. It may be archived somewhere on the site. If I do find the archive, I'll post that as well. But he will be on the show tomorrow to talk with us. Young fellow, family man. There he is with his sister, and I think possibly his brother. And Mr. Burton Schlichter was able to arrange this interview for us. So, Bert, on behalf of the studio audience, thank you very much. And he will be here at 12:45 Eastern. So I do hope each and every one of you will be able to tune in, especially those of you who were clients of MF Global. Maybe you're still waiting on some money, or I'm pretty sure we had somebody in here yesterday who said they were a client of PFG Best. By all means, you should be here. And this gentleman is going to be, you know, taking questions, whatever they might be. Even if you're not a client, if you just have questions in general, like some of the questions that were asked earlier in the week, how do you safeguard your money? What's a smart thing to do? What are the red flags? It's going to be a great interview, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward, David, to having you here with me to ask deep, insightful, and probing questions.
Well, I would be very happy to do so, and it would be interesting. I think this is an interesting subject because of the it seems like we're having a wave, if at least at the very beginning, wave of these things happening to brokerages, along with waves of bankruptcies in cities and states. So I'd be curious to see what his outlook is on people getting their money back. And, you know, with PFG, nobody knows, as you said yesterday, really where the money is. But I think it's atrocious that an industry that is an honorable industry has to suffer this. It's just these things happen, but it's funny that we've had two of them in a row now. And, you know, this is not going to, if we have another and another after this, it's going to be very difficult for the brokerage industry to recover from this, and they will have to lobby for some kind of insurance because people are going to get tired of putting their money up and hoping that some nut that works high up is not going to have access to so-called segregated funds and be able to go run off with it and then try to kill himself or whatever these people's plans are.
Now, this gentleman, he runs a commodity trading advisory firm, Typhoon Capital Management. 50 of his clients were affected with the MF Global meltdown. roughly $55 million involved. And so he got in there and he got busy, and he now represents something like 8,000 customers. But we'll get through all of that tomorrow, and we'll find out more information. So I look forward to that. And, Mike, I know that you have to run and get back to work, but thanks for hanging out, and thanks for coming on and chatting with us. And he's already gone, like that.
Well, there you are.
When a man says he's got to go, he's got to go. Somebody yesterday scolded me.
I accidentally had on mute, Dwayne. Thanks
you're still there. Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right.
I was on mute. Thanks for having me, Dwayne.
All right, buddy.
Nice to talk with you, Mike.
Yeah, you do, David. And I look forward to listening to this tomorrow. Hope he goes get some.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
Now, somebody scolded me pretty hard yesterday because I failed to ask a question. Or I didn't see a question until you'd already gone, and now I can't even remember what the question was. So I asked them to come back. I apologize and asked them to come back and ask the question again today. So if you're in the audience, I think your name was John. And I apologized profusely yesterday, so I'll apologize again and ask you to repost your question. Now, there is a question here for you from Jim. David, you have maintained that the markets are not manipulatable, that they cannot be manipulated, that it is a fallacy, that it is fiction. I'm adding stuff, but... Uh-huh. In light of the LIBOR manipulation by Barclays Bank, do you still believe this to be true?
Well, I don't know the details, to be honest with you, on the LIBOR manipulation of Barclays. The term manipulation, I would have to ask you what you mean by that word manipulation.
Yeah, Jim,
what I'm referring to when I speak about it is that a person or a group gets control over a market and runs it to some number they want to run it to, or just crushes it to, you know, puts it into a bear market or whatever, something that otherwise would not be doable without them grouping together to do that. And the examples that I've given in the past were very public ones, very much maybe like the LIBOR one that you're saying, except making my point that back in the 90s, seven governments got together to try to prop up the Japanese yen, and the Japanese yen, seven governments, that's an awful lot of money. And the Japanese yen just continued to go down. They couldn't change the course of the Japanese yen. Seven individual countries could not change the course of the Japanese yen with the influence of money. One of the most recent ones, although there's many, many public examples of this, one of the most recent ones is Warren Buffett buying silver at $8. Warren Buffett has a very large following of people in the millions that believe in what he's doing, believe in his investing acumen, etc. And yet, and those people followed him into the silver market, silver's price was cut in half from the point that he got in, down to $4, prior to the rally that he was expecting happening. So my position is that simply having a lot of money to invest in the market isn't enough to do what people would call manipulation. If there's some other magic or some other thing that they can do outside of money, money has been proven over and over again to not be able to do the very thing that we're talking about. Now, when Warren got in the market, he got in probably with about $1 billion. Maybe that's not enough in the books to manipulate a market. Silver's not a real thick market. It's not the most volume-ridden market. But he got in, and there's thousands and legions and thousands of people who followed him into the market when they found that out, because they believe in what he is doing. As an investor, he certainly has a good record. So it would be fair to say that billions of dollars were put in the market, and the market still cut that price right in half. If money can manipulate the market, it didn't do it there. It didn't do it in a number of previous cases where public people got into the market and it went the other way, public large people. If it really was that easy to have billions of dollars and to move the market. There's plenty of funds out there that have billions of dollars, and they're not able to move the market. If they could, it would simply be a matter of collecting enough money, putting it into one fund, and then just hitting that market with all that money and watching the prices just go happily into the direction that you're manipulating it. But the facts of the matter are that's not how it has played out. There have been plenty of funds that have billions of dollars that are unable to run the markets. Having said all of that, there are a number of examples in the past where people have had what could be called a corner on the market. And so there are periods of time where, for just the nature of everything together, the whole shoot and match together, you know, the whole universe is working in this, that for a short period of time, a small number of people can have control over market. You could say they corner the market. And maybe that's what you mean in this, is that somebody gets into that position where they can kind of corner the market. For whatever reason, there's just an ability to get in there and do that, because life is big enough to contain everything. You can't ever say, you know, never say never, the James Bond movie. I think there was a James Bond movie and he titled that, but I don't remember the title of it exactly. But for the most part, it's extremely difficult and extremely rare to be able to literally move a market to numbers that you want to move it to with money. And that's why I also say that the arguments that you're trading against professionals and that they have more knowledge than you and they can do things that you can't do, like as an example, when you buy your S&P E-mini from a professional, that even though you no longer control the market when you've bought it and he no longer controls the market or doesn't control it when he sells it, the fact that he's a professional makes him have some magic that you don't have. And he doesn't have any magic that you don't have, nor does he have the ability to run the market to specific numbers. He's subject to the market, just like you are, both buyer and seller are. So even though there may be rare instances where a small group of people, one way or the other, somehow get a corner on the market, it's so rare as to not be practical as a way of looking at markets. Really, this is what I'm addressing. That this becomes a conspiracy theory in people's minds that they, you know, are running them or they have driven the prices up, they are holding the prices up, they this, they that. It's not practical to operate with that theory because they can only do it rarely. And it's so rare that even the big boys can't get it right. It just happens sometimes. It just is like a happening. It just happens. Like a plane running into a building happens. It's just a one-time thing. Once in a long time, it might happen. Now, that's my take on it. I don't have an opinion on it. I have only evidence. And the evidence that I've seen over 22 years of doing this is quite a bit of information about big, big players getting into markets and getting slaughtered. When you buy silver at $8 and it goes and cuts its price in half, that's a pretty good shellacking on your position. When seven governments go in, and I don't have all my whole list in front of me because there is a long list, it's just not practical to think that way. It's much more practical to say it can happen. Jim, if that was, it was the fellow's name, Jim, or John, who asked that? It was a Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. It's more practical to say, for a matter of speaking, that yes, it does, it can happen. It's very rare. And even when it does happen, it surprises the people themselves who are involved in trying to corner the market, because it doesn't work 99% of the time. That's what I'm saying. From all practical purposes, it's a blue moon. So once in a while, and whatever this LIBOR thing was, maybe if that was the case, fair enough. I don't know what it was, but I would have to know what you mean by the term manipulation. A lot of people use that. Oh, the markets are being manipulated. You know, really? They really are being manipulated? Somebody is actually going in and moving the prices consciously, knowingly, with money from one level to the next?
Yeah, that's what happened in this case. The world's biggest banks, it is now no longer a conspiracy, but an actual fact based on emails from Barclays banks and their traders and other banks that in fact, the world's biggest banks are running the world. The LIBOR affects everyone on the planet that takes part in any kind of
How does the
commerce.
Email prove it? What email proves that they did it? They might want to do it. It's like
we have
saying,
to get kicked out of the fixings tomorrow, read the email. We need a 417 fix in 1M. We need a 441 fix in 3M. The email from a senior Barclays Capital trader in the bank's offices in the MetLife building looked down over New York's Park Avenue to a trader in the bank's London offices in Canary Wharf could have seemed innocuous to the unknowing eye. But what the American banker was doing was telling his British counterpart exactly where they needed the LIBOR, the London interbank offered rate used to set interest rates for everything from mortgages to complex derivatives to be fixed. So it was...
How do they do that? What are they doing? Let's say he is standing there and he's blinking and giving him a signal. What does the guy then do? And does he mean fix? Does he mean run the prices to that? What does the fix mean? Does that
okay?
Mean
the LIBOR fix on interest rates, dollar denominated, was established in 1985. Hundreds of the biggest banks from around the world agreed with the British Banking Association to use the LIBOR rates as the benchmark for their operations. The 16 biggest banks communicate with the BBA in London each business day, relating what interest they would expect to pay if they were to borrow from member banks for different periods of time. The BBA then throws out the highest and lowest four suggested rates for each time period, and then averages the remaining rates, and then announces the LIBOR rate for each time period at 11 a.m. each day.
Now, so is that a market? Is the LIBOR then literally a traded market, or is it not?
Hang on.
Is it something different?
Hang on. Why should we care about the LIBOR? The LIBOR is the benchmark from which actual rates are negotiated in the marketplace and affects all futures contracts, variable rate mortgages, credit card rates, foreign exchange rates. Still, the LIBOR is not something the average American worries about the first thing every morning. There's no need to do so. The manner in which LIBOR is determined is reasonable and logical. But what if some or all of the 16 banks who established the LIBOR were manipulating it to their benefit at the expense of everyone else? Well, that is what this whole scandal is about, and that is, in fact, it's like doping a horse at the racetrack. It's, here were 16 banks that had the power to abuse the system, and they did for many, many years, and now they've been caught, and so... It was called a conspiracy for a long time. Now it's just a fact. There are currently 900,000 lawsuits pending against Barclays. The second Barclays announced its $450 million LIBOR settlement, it was all over. The lawyers smelled not only blood, but... what may be the biggest plaintiff feeding frenzy of all time, which is why it was only a matter of time. States attorney generals are jumping into the widening scandal over the manipulation, a move that could open a new front against the top global banks. Handful of state's attorney generals said they are looking into whether they have jurisdiction over the banks and are starting preliminary discussions to determine what kind of impact the conduct involving the LIBOR rate may have had in their states.
Okay, well, I would like to find out what the term fix means, because that's not a normal trading term, and I don't know if the LIBOR itself is a market or if it's some other kind of beast.
Okay.
Other than a market.
Here's what it is. The London Interbank Offered Rate, LIBOR, is the average interest rate estimated by leading banks in London that they would be charged if borrowing from other banks. It is usually abbreviated to LIBOR, or more officially to BBA LIBOR. It is a benchmark, along with the Euribor, for interest rates all around the world. And so a cartel comes to, it's like fixing the price of gas or fixing the price of milk, where you have all of the, you know, dairy farmers in a county or whatever, and they get together and say, okay, guys, this fellow over here, he wants to sell the milk really cheap.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to starve, so let's all agree that we're not going to sell our milk for less than X. So instead of it being a free market, it's one that is actually controlled by a cartel of, you know, powerful people.
Right. Banks. What I want to find out, and what you haven't answered yet for me, is the LIBOR itself.
No, you don't trade the LIBOR.
Market.
No,
okay.
The LIBOR affects what you pay in interest rates. It affects what you pay for a futures contract on the S&P 500.
Well, my discussion is not about things we don't trade, even though this scam that involves this, and I do want to look into this a little bit more, but I'm talking about things that do trade, and you're saying, yes, this thing here, this LIBOR, it can be manipulated, even though it's not a freely traded thing. I'm speaking about markets.
Maybe you can trade it. Maybe you can.
Yeah, okay. But let's just say if you can't, if it's something that these people can sort of fix, because the term fix is not a trading term. That's not a term in the, you know, markets. So when we talk about these people do the fix on this, I don't know exactly what they're talking about. And so my discussion about markets being manipulated have to do with the market itself, that people with money are running the market up and down. That's been my discussion. This discussion is about some higher level thing that can be fixed or set in some way, which itself may not be a freely traded market or a tradable market, and that once that fix is in, those markets that are the actual markets under that get affected by those numbers. And that would be something that you would say, well, yeah, certainly, if these people can adjust those numbers any way they want, just by raising their hand and blinking an eye, and that then makes other futures markets look to those numbers, certainly, that is a form of manipulation. I won't argue that. But my argument is about the act of manipulating a market with money, a trading market, a tradable market. Interest rates, whatever you want to call it. I think the LIBOR is going to turn out to be something that a group of people may be able to control without trading it. And my discussion is about the common theme that you hear from traders.
Yeah, they don't have to get their
hands. They're running the market.
They don't have to get their hands dirty and actually trade something.
Okay.
They just
my
collude.
Discussion has been about, to answer Jim, about markets that do trade, and my discussion is about whether or not a person or a group or a Warren Buffett or another large investment group can run a market to numbers that they want to run it to without just doing that with money. This LIBOR thing may in fact be something very different. It may be two different. You're asking a question about a whole different entity that I'm not talking about. It is true, though, that if that LIBOR rate, however it's set, since it's not a tradable, let's assume it's not a tradable and it's something that these people somehow can set, that other markets look to that and that changes those other markets' outlooks, then those other markets could be manipulated to some extent, obviously, by those numbers. There are very important levels and numbers that the LIBOR sets. So
now, those banks, of course, knowing where interest rates are fixed to, as Jim says, can obviously trade against that fact in the real world.
Yes,
in every market, from gold to silver to E-minis to real estate.
And that would be manipulation. I would agree with Jim. That would be manipulation because they have insider information which they derived without trading. Somebody gave them that number, and that number means something without having to trade to get to that number. It's just set by these people who are scamming. And so in that sense, it's purely manipulation because the market, the bankers and other people can trade against a number, like you said, and know that the whole market knows about that number now that's been set, et cetera, however it all works. But again, my discussion has been about the idea that people with utilizing money in trading itself can and do routinely run markets up and down. What Jim is bringing up here is a form of manipulation, no question about it. That, and I don't know how the LIBOR works and how the fix works and all that stuff, but I bet you that isn't trading. I bet you those numbers are not derived, and that it isn't a group of people trading, like you say, getting their hands dirty, moving numbers up and down. That's way up the ladder, and yet it still is a form of manipulation. So on one level, there it is. There's a form of manipulation where, however it gets done, it was manipulated. So, you know, I give you that, because there's some way that somebody can manipulate that LIBOR number without having to worry about trading it and all that stuff. So I'll give you that. But I do not have any evidence that it's tradable, and I'll check into it, nor do I have any evidence, and I have evidence to the contrary, pretty much irrefutable, that people with very, very big money routinely cannot move the market if the market's going down. Just as a sheer example, I wonder what the long interest in the crude oil market was when on April 4th we came out with a forecast saying that it would crash in the month of May down to $88. And at the time it was trading at, you know, 103. Okay, well, maybe people who saw that crash would say, you know what, this thing's manipulated. A whole bunch of people got together and ran this thing down. But if it was manipulated, then why would we have the information in advance when we don't manipulate it? We're just forecasting it. Why, are they following our forecast in their manipulation? No. It's just the way markets work. And so my argument still stands that in the tradable world, the world where you have to buy and sell to get prices to go up and down, the world of supply and demand, that world is not very often, it's extremely rare that that can be manipulated directly by somebody with money.
There is a LIBOR contract traded on the CME. I don't know how actively it's traded.
Yeah, and I would like to check into that, but words like fix and things like that aren't trading terms, so I'd like to find out what that means and how that works, etc. In the end, if it turns out that these people are using money to somehow push the LIBOR up and down, then I'll tell you, well, you know, if that can be proven, then that proves that they were able to do that. I doubt that's the case, but we'll find out, because the LIBOR
is... Barclays is paying $450 million initially. The first lawsuit, they're paying out $450 million. So apparently they did something wrong.
Yeah, they did something wrong. That's all that says. That doesn't make the argument that we're talking about two potentially different things here. If somebody can show me evidence that somebody moved a market with money, I'd like to see it. If you show me evidence that somebody took something that exists above markets, perhaps the LIBOR rate is something like that, and manipulated it, that's a different subject. That's not the same as moving it with money.
Okay, Jim, you know, I guess you lose. So let's move on.
Well, no, Duane, I'm not making him wrong. I've made a distinction between what he and you are bringing up, and the distinction is very clear, and you understand the distinction.
But the effect is the same.
None of us know for sure what the LIBOR is and how it's moved. You have not told me how it moves yet. You
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah, I did. I just read you the whole thing from Wikipedia.
No, but it doesn't explain how it is moved in normal practice. If it's a tradable that is being used, money is being moved to move it up or down. Or do men get to just wink at each other and change the price and, quote-unquote, fix it? That's a very different beast than having a tradable where millions of people are trading and buying and selling where there's supply and demand. It's a very different thing. Whether or not they paid $450 million out is meaningless at this point. I'm just making the argument that I've always made, which is that if it's tradable, it's not manipulatable for 99% of the time. Once in a great while, under some certain set of conditions, it can happen. But I have all kinds of evidence that it doesn't happen, and that people with billions of dollars have not been able to move the market with money. So the LIBOR is probably some other type of instrument, and we'll find out how it's worked. I mean, do you know what the fix is, Duane? Do you know what the term means?
I just read the whole thing. I'll send you the Wikipedia definition so that you can determine it.
Is it a well, I'm asking you, since you say you know what it is. Explain to me what it is.
Okay.
What is the fix? Is it tradable? Is the fix something that we arrive at by trading?
No, it's the LIBOR rate is something that the 16 banks involved, one of which is Barclays, decide on behind closed doors.
Okay, well, that's my point. They decide on it, and it's not traded. That's my whole point here. It's not a tradable. It's a decision, and they got caught making decisions that would favor them somehow in this scam. It's not something where millions of people are using supply and demand to make it get to that number, and that's been my argument.
Okay.
So, and I'll check into it as well. I want to read about it. I didn't hear about it. I didn't see the news, and it's a very fair question. Because it's obviously some form of manipulation if people are getting together. It's not, and it does affect markets, like you said. Underneath the once the LIBOR rate is set, apparently it affects all kinds of markets. That's again, you know, it's different than what I've been talking about.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha.
All right. So let's see. Let's move on from that. And I hope, Jim, I hope that's at least I clarified my position. I hope. Well enough for you, and I will check into it. We can talk about it a little bit more. And I've said this before. Listen, if it turns out that it is a tradable and they somehow moved it, you know what? That's really going to surprise me. That's going to be really a big surprise if that's the possibility that is what they're doing.
It's not. It's their decisions that affect the things that are traded. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. So that's
their
the
decisions.
Part where,
their decisions affect all the other things that do get traded, from corn
mm-hmm.
to the euro.
So yeah, and that's a form
farmland.
Of manipulation.
So yeah,
there's no question
so
about
it's,
it. That's
it's,
a form
it's
of
definitely
manipulation.
Two different things.
Okay, so you want to get on to? Let's see. I had something else that we wanted to talk about today before that, and thank you for your question, Jim, as well. Something to do with the bank, either the bankruptcies or something else. I can't remember it. I didn't write it down. Was there some other news about state bankruptcies today or city bankruptcies? I'm sorry. I didn't write it down, and it was a good thing too, and I wanted to mention it. And
news.
When if I think of it,
state.
Dwayne, I'll put it back up here.
Bankruptcy.
So while he's checking that, let's take a look at the S&P for today. Today is a very critical day for the S&P because we're at the one day late for a bottom, the on-time day for a bottom. And anybody with reflected wave knows about the June 11th daily bottom. So the first thing of importance for today is that if we were to close above yesterday's low, which is the on-time day at 1327.75, that would be a stronger position. When we get to the one day late, which is today, June 12th, it indicates that the market's at a critical juncture at that point, where the likelihood of a multi-day bounce is in play. You're going to see the market want to move higher for a number of days. So that would mean we want to look for long positions. And this morning already, just by what they've done, they got down to 1319.75. They rallied up and moved through some somewhat important levels. You were talking earlier, Dwayne, about the 1328. I forgot what the number was, but was it 2829 was the level you talked about?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they've moved through that. And that is one of the early signs now that the market is expressing bigger power, so to speak, on the upside than might normally be expected. And that ties in with the one day late. So with that in mind, we may very well want to start looking for long positions, either pullbacks, et cetera, or breakouts, whatever, for a multi-day move up from this level. So we'll see how the remainder of the day goes here, but they have moved through some important levels on the upside, and that is an early sign that the cycle is starting to turn here. So I think this is a pretty important, today has been pretty important. What they did today, running them down, has been pretty important. And anybody who was long, who could sit through whatever their drawdown was, hopefully not too big, has now got their early indication that their position, you know, that their indication is correct and that we may have the multi-day move up from here. Now, having said that, in spite of that, the fact is that we've talked about this for a number of days, that there's a bigger cycle that we're concerned about. The big down move that we've had here is from a weekly reflected wave top on the week of July 2nd. This was one of the turning points that we've talked about on the program. And so this is the first week after that. We've had a pretty good decline off of that. And so a bounce wouldn't be unusual. But having said all of that, the bigger picture that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, where we're saying that there's this bigger cycle that has not yet completely exhausted itself, has us somewhat concerned, and that we think the market is vulnerable to a move down, leaves me, I'm still in that same position. And what I want to say right now is that this market, as we sit right now, at the end of this month, if we close above 1306, that will be a stronger position. But if we were to close the month, in spite of this bounce that we're having right now, multi-day bounce, if we do close above 1306, that is the stronger position for the month. If we close below that, then the market is much more vulnerable to the expression that we're talking about, the bigger move down. So just keep that in mind. And then, of course, between now and the end of the month, any more than significant or any significant break of that level would be important, because it would be an early sign that even if we do get a bounce on the daily here, it would be an early sign that we're going to go substantially lower and to prices that I think would surprise you on the downside. I'm not going to talk about those prices now, but I will. We do have a roadmap that's coming out soon, and for those of you who are on Messenger Pro, you'll get that roadmap before anybody else. And so, and if you want to, you can come to take a free trial, if you'd like, of Messenger Pro, which is our day trading product and our longer-term trading product, which you go to pagetrader.com, sign up for the trial, and see if you can take use of these roadmaps. The last roadmap we had was worth, not that you would have gotten this, but it was worth almost $12,000 per contract. That's an awfully big move. That was for the crude oil. Even if you could get a quarter of that, which is probably reasonable, considering that most people are not capable of holding on to positions for long periods of time, no matter how sure they are of the forecast, but even one quarter of that would be a very decent trade. This move down in the S&P would also be quite sizable, and certainly would be associated with news, other facts, you know, other things that are that normally move the market. So for the time being, until we come out with the roadmap, I'd like you to consider the daily bottom, which is today is the one day late. We've already done something today that proves that the market is in a stronger position or beginning to express some more strength, and then that would lead us into a multi-day sideways to up movement here for the market. And that's our outlook right now on the S&P, Dwayne. We're looking for today to mark a very important bottom and for an advance off this bottom.
All righty.
So there you are. Any comment on that or anything you want to add to that?
No. We like to be in short below 1340, and that worked out really well. Ultimately, it dropped. There was three swings off of that area. The third one dropped 20 points. So at our next zone is so much farther down, down at 13, and that's our final zone on the downside for the week, 1307, 1308. I definitely expected a bounce back to 28, 29, and we may see it bounce even higher. This last hourly candle's got a big wick on it, but we made a nice move in that hour. It went from 26 all the way up to 32. So we moved 6 points higher in the previous hour. Mm-hmm. So that's got a very bullish sort of a tone to it.
No doubt. And it's the kind of thing that might indicate a bigger force starting to come into play, like we said. So, you know, you want to take all these things carefully, because I am concerned on the downside, but I do like the idea that we've had a good decline off the weekly top. We're at the one-day late. This normally will lead to a pretty good rally. So let's use that and take that information and use it later as the market continues to confirm.
We had a big bullish hour right here yesterday, but then it fizzled right out and rolled back over. This hour here opened at, well, it had a low of 30 and a high of 39. So this was actually a 9-point rally in 1 hour yesterday, and then it just died. And so we'll see if this one can stick, you know. It would have to, for us, or what I would want to see is, on any rally, I would want to see it get over this 42, 43 hurdle here, and then, you know, hold that on a pullback. First the 40 and then the 42, 40, hold that on a pullback, and then, yeah. I mean, this news out of London overnight that the bank cut their interest rate, their overnight lending rate to zero, that had an effect on the markets. I'm not sure the markets know what to make of that yet, and it may take them a couple days to fully react to that. But at least those banks will now be almost forced to lend money. They won't be forced to, but they won't just send it back to the central bank every night to collect their 0.25% interest or whatever it was they were making. They've said enough of this. You know, we gave you this stimulus money to loan to people, to loan to businesses, to, you know, create jobs, et cetera, and you guys are afraid to loan it. You're just putting it back in the safe at night and drawing a little bit of interest, and that's not what we intended. So they whacked them, and they said 0%. So you can put it back in the safe at night, but you're not going to earn any interest on it. So that should have a very bullish impact on world markets.
Loaning practices,
Loaning
practices, and therefore, that's interesting. You know, I've noticed, and this is just for Las Vegas, but there are more people being financed now for purchasing homes, cars. Obviously, in order for the GM, as an example, to have a record year, loans for cars had to be put through, and people's credit ratings are not as high as they used to be. So money is being loaned, but it is still very difficult, especially on the bigger loans, to get a loan. And one of the things that I think would loosen up the economy is not irresponsible lending, like the kind that we had leading into the crash where, you know, it's the American dream, everyone should be able to have a home. Well, that's a very sweet sentiment, but it doesn't match reality. And we, of course, found out that many people can't afford a home, even when given the money to buy one. They can't afford to pay it back. So this goes back to that same thing we talked about yesterday, Duane, where, you know, we might want to do nice things for people, but the reality is they may not be able to afford it, or it may not be prudent to do so, and it may actually play havoc with the natural forces of supply and demand in the housing, and in this particular case, you know, the housing market, loans, et cetera. And so here in Nevada, you know, we still have just as everywhere else, we have a housing market that's very depressed. But there are sales going on. People are being financed, and it would be really very nice to see the banks loosen up, not irresponsibly, not because they're trying to help the little guy, but they're loosening up because they're giving credit to people who are credit worthy and letting those people purchase homes. They're being much tighter than that, and to see that change, and what you're saying is that may actually have an effect, would be wonderful. I think that would be very good for the economy to see more housing get sold, and that would pick up the ability for people with reasonable or good credit to go get a home. There is some, I've heard this, I don't know if this is true, but the people who foreclose on their homes have the 7-year credit kit. It's basically like a bankruptcy or something, and they can't buy a home. It's possible that the administration may do something at some point to reduce, I've heard this, some of that time period so that people aren't out of the market for 7 years. So we'll see if that ever comes about. But no one wants to take the hit. You know, that's the thing. Nobody wants to ever take the hit. And if you, we went through this yesterday. If you spend money, if you use credit irresponsibly, at some point you will take the, you have to take the hit. And the longer you wait, the harder that hit's going to be, and the more you're going to try to figure out ways to not have to take it. It's much better to take the hit, as we've all found out as adults early on, and even in politics, you see where if something goes wrong and the word gets out that a certain politician did something he shouldn't do, it's so much better if he takes the hit. Hey, you've seen this. If he doesn't take the hit, if he tries to hide it, boy, everyone and their mother comes chasing after him until he finally takes the hit. And then at that point, it's just a death bell for him. However, if that same person comes out early and says, you know what, I had an affair with such and such, you know, whatever it was, and just comes right out and just spills all the ugly details, it hurts. He takes the hit. But in many cases, he stays in office, or he doesn't, the crunch isn't so bad. The crunch really gets bad when you keep trying to put the thing off to try to put it off into the future. And that's true for politics. It's true for money. It's true for financing, for anything where something was done wrongly, incorrectly, whether purposely or not, and now you have to take the hit. The longer you wait, the harder it gets. And so in general, in your personal life and in business and in every other way, it's usually better to take the hit early on and not try to figure out ways around it, because it just tends to get worse. I mean, we've all seen that as adults, you know. You live long enough, you see that that's the best way out. So we see that often in politics now, where people get caught and they just come right out and say, yep, this is what I did. I forgot who he is. Maybe his last name is Tucker. I don't know who it is. The guy that he was a governor of some state and he disappeared for 5 days. And during those 5 days, he was out in some exotic island with his new girlfriend and he left his wife.
Wasn't that South Carolina? Wasn't he the governor of South Carolina?
Do you know? I don't remember his name.
I don't. Somebody
but
will type it in.
He's still there. The guy is still there. I mean, this is the kind of scandal that would have rocked anybody. But the fact is he came right out and just said, yep. And he not only talked about it, but he went on and on about it. Those of you who will remember,
yeah.
He was on TV and he had a lot. He just, you know, oh, she's wonderful. She's beautiful. I got carried away and da da da. And it's like, okay, enough. And then we went to this room and then we did this. And they couldn't shut him up about it. And that guy still has his job.
I do believe his wife left him, but I'm not sure if does he still have the job?
Well, he did for many years afterwards.
This just happened last year, I think.
I'm sorry?
This just happened last year.
No, it was a while before that, I thought. I thought this has been a while yet. I don't think this was 2011. Maybe you're right. Maybe my memory is bad. I have a bad memory for time, so I'm not sure.
Mark,
but it's been
Sanford,
a while.
I think, was the...
Mark something, yeah. And so Mark he's Sanford. An example of somebody who came out and laid it all out, and he kept his job. I remember seeing him, what seems to be in my memory, at least a year or later, still in that job.
Yeah, it was 2009. For 6 days in 2009. His whereabouts were unknown. Yep.
Yeah, and he was out having a great old time with his mistress on some exotic island. I mean, that's the kind of thing that would make people just lose their jobs instantly. He came out, he came clean, he took the hit. And so really, just as a matter of course, you'll find if you do take the hit earlier, it hurts, but it does fix the problem, and the problem only tends to get worse if you don't take it. So the current administration, we're trying to keep spreading out and pushing out and pushing back and spending more to not have to have people take the hit. And look at what has happened in these communities, Wisconsin and the fellow we talked about yesterday that's in San Bernardino. You know, we just don't have the money. We are just going to stop spending right now, and we're just going to take the hit now before it turns into the whole place going up in flames. And nobody likes it, but I'll guarantee you, you watch how well these things turn out. Wisconsin turned out very well. Watch how San Bernardino, watch what happens when leadership actually stands up and says, listen, this is really ugly, but we just have to take the hit. We're going to have to lower your pay. We're paying you too much. We don't have the money. We just don't have it to pay. We owe it to you. And we'll be able to pay it later if we take the hit now, and everything will be made whole at some point. Watch what happens, because typically that's the kind of thinking that gets you through a problem, not trying to avoid it and work out schemes to keep things running and looking like and keeping everybody happy, and then running around trying to tax people or whatever you do to try to, you know, fix the problem. And they may have to raise taxes for a while to do that. But they did the responsible thing, and they're cutting their spending. If our government would do the same thing, cut back on the spending, show just as much grotesque enthusiasm for spending, show just as much for cutting back, then we would have a remarkable government. And America would come back very strong, very quickly. And by the way, one of the things that frightened businessmen all through 2010 and 2011 was they never knew what this administration was going to do with the Bush tax cuts. And of course, now we find out that their fears were quite well-founded, weren't they? That, yeah, the tax cuts are going to be continued, except for about a million small businesses, people who have $250,000 or more, or whatever the number is. So those people, this is one of the reasons why the economy is having trouble, is that businessmen do not want to invest in an environment where they're afraid of the administration. They don't feel, have you ever had a landlord? Have you ever been in a home where they feel like the landlord's against you? Most people have had that experience. You're renting and you're in your house, but you know that he doesn't like you, or that he's suspicious of you, or he's always checking up on you, or just bad. Well, that doesn't make you want to do nice things for the house. It doesn't make you want to expand in your life. You know, you're not in concert. You're not with the guy. The guy's not with you. You're not working together with him. You're working against him. Well, that's how a lot of businessmen, and this isn't my opinion, that's how a lot of businessmen feel about this administration. They know for a fact that these guys, you know, they talk about the rich like it's an ugly thing, and these people don't even consider themselves rich. They're trying to run a business. I would like to see somebody in this administration run a successful business to see what it's like to try to do so. It's not the easiest thing on the planet, and if you do have enough success to make some money, it's an amazing thing, and it's difficult to keep it running, to keep the thing going. And then you have the government there and all that. So these people have been not feeling like the government's on their side. And now, lo and behold, right before the election, he comes out with the information, yeah, we're going to do this, but we're going to do it, and this is going to be against the businessmen. Because he doesn't talk about rich people as being prosperous, about winning the American dream. He talks about it like it's a bad thing to have succeeded. It's not done in a tone that isn't that wonderful, or isn't this an amazing thing that this can happen here, because it certainly doesn't happen everywhere on the earth. No, it's done with a very different tone, and a lot of business people have picked up on that. A lot of people who could invest but aren't investing have picked up on that. That tone has led people to feel very uncomfortable with the idea that they don't want to wake up one morning and find, our really cool president, and he is really cool. He's got something very cool about him, but he's come up with another idea that somehow is going to, you know, paint these people into a bad corner, make their investments less worthwhile, tax them more, you know, whatever it is. And so they were right. They were right to be worried about making those new investments, because he wants them to pay more when everyone else gets off without paying more. And the argument isn't whether we should all pay taxes or not. The argument is, does this guy have it out for people who are the ugly rich? That's anybody who makes more than $250,000 a year. They're not prosperous. They haven't done the American dream. It's an ugly thing in his mind. And that's what bothers me, is that that's what we're all about here, is finding opportunities in America. I mean, that's why people move here. That's why people risk their lives to come here, is because there's an opportunity to live well, to live medium, to live wherever you want to live. What, you don't have to be, living in a palace somewhere, but to have a good life. And the anti-prosperity tone is part of the reason why the economy has trouble coming back, because we're getting that from the top down. So they were right. The small businessmen were right. They had poll after poll of them for the last 2 years, and they're worried about what the president is going to do to them, and here he is doing it. Here it is. Anyway. Okay, so we've covered the S&P. I do want to repeat that we do think, especially if we close well today, put it this way, here's another way of thinking about it in short term. There should be no daily close below today's low from this day forward, for many, many days. And if for some reason it does, be short. Be happy about being short. because something much bigger is at work if that's the case. And, as I said before, 1306, if we close below that, even on a week, that's a very, very powerful sign that something much bigger does need to complete on the downside. And so we want to keep an eye on that. So S&P is kind of at a critical position here, very much so. Not kind of, it is at a critical position right here. Okay, so we can move on from here. Dwayne, anything else you want to mention on this market?
No, you want to go to gold?
Sure. Gold, this is a few days back. We had had a forecast for gold to make an advance, which it tried to do, which was from 1576 up to 16, at or near 1606. It got up to 1602. I mentioned the other day that it's kind of unusual, or an unusual cluster, so to speak, of varying forces would have to be at work to have it miss it and to go down again. And that's exactly what happened. We didn't forecast the down part. We forecast the advance up to at or near 1606. They got to 1602. So this is unusual behavior that gold expressed here. It's tricky behavior. So gold also is approaching a critical juncture here. And in terms of timing, next week is going to be very important for the gold market. So on a weekly basis, I want to wait before we give out anything new in gold until next week. So we'll leave that for the time being. I don't have anything new to add to it right now that's worth putting out there as a trade or anything like that. It is interesting. It's really interesting what they did, how they did it. Next week is the week of July 16th. So we're in the 1 week early right now. So what I want to do is, my preference would be I'd love to see a slightly new low below this week's low. But if that doesn't happen, then we'll take it from there and we'll be able to do something on the upside with gold. Wait, though. I think it'd be wise to be prudent with this and wait. Then we can switch over to the interest rate market. We talked a few days ago about the yield curve and the interest rates, the price of the tradable itself, the bond market itself, the 30-year U.S. Treasury bond. And it was, it wasn't really up with the yield, and then price did catch up and did rally nicely. We talked about the level of 151.15, and closes above that would be stronger, and under normal conditions they would have trouble closing above that. Now, yesterday they closed below it, 151.04, and today, right now, we're trading at 151.15. So no trade yet on this, but how they handle this level will be important and will probably set something up. I know most of us don't trade in the – well, from what I know, most of us don't trade in the interest rate markets. So, and sometimes we do take trades in this, and this is an optionable market. This is a market that has options, so you can trade options on it. We've done very well with options over the years. We do quite a bit of them, and we – try to set up and wait for these longer-term turning points to come in to trade off of these bigger turns. So if you want to know more about that, in fact, we haven't in a while given out Bert's number. Maybe it'd be a good idea, Dwayne, just to give that out again. So Bert Schlichter from Daniels Trading can talk to you about the use of options. He has a number of traders that we know and work with as well that are sizable private traders that do options. And Bert can help you understand the nature of the option and then how to put it to work in a trade. He's not going to have you mimic their trade or anything like that, but, you know, whatever the trade is, how to utilize these options. I don't have his number right in front of me, Dwayne, if you have it.
The number is 866-928-3310.
There you are.
866-928-3310.
Yeah, you call up and you just say to Bert, you know what, I heard about you on the radio and I just want to talk a little bit about options, and maybe you have a broker at another brokerage somewhere and maybe you're happy with them, maybe not. But one thing that Bert can do for you is he'll spend time talking to you about the various ways to take advantage of any of these trades, whether they're Dwayne's or ours, utilizing options. And the option is a very interesting instrument. It has a lot of different, it has a little bit of complexity to it. It won't take too long to learn it. It took me a little while. I'm a bit of a slow study, but once I get it in, you know, I'm good. It took me a little time to get them down. But the fact is that once you get them down, you don't have to utilize all of that information, you can just use some simple methods to put trades together with options. They're slower boat. It's a slower boat. It's not necessarily something that's going to make you money immediately overnight. But there is a payday with options, and it can work out very well. We've shown our statement. We're in actual trades over the last 12 months. We've made about just under $130,000 trading nothing but options and doing nothing but selling options. And we're going to show that statement today on our webinar, which is for reflected wave, which is our turning point methodology, all these turning points that we're talking about. These are reflected wave turns. And you can come to our webinar if you'd like to today. It's at 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Chicago time, 4:30 Eastern time. And you can go to our website at pagetrader.com and click on the Traders blog on the right-hand side. If that doesn't click properly, just make it full screen, and then it will work. It'll click you over to the Traders blog, and you can click on the link to sign up for today. We're going to talk about not only the basic use of reflected wave, but also some more advanced uses of it, because I know a lot of people who've come to these webinars, thank you, Dwayne, who've come to these webinars before have seen the basic turning points. But there's a whole lot more that you can do with reflected wave, a whole lot more sophisticated setup that you can put together utilizing reflected wave. And I'm going to show you that today at this webinar, how we do it, and how we put some of these trades together. I can't promise you that you'll make money, of course, but I can promise you that you'll know how to call the turns. And that's a very good start. It's an edge in the market. And you need an edge everywhere in life, don't you? You need an edge. You know, if school is 5 miles away and you have to walk it, your edge would be taking a bus. You have an edge. Or buying a car. You have even better edge. Look in every area of your life. You've worked out an edge. Talking to women, for example, you know, you've learned something about them. One of the greatest mysteries on earth, a woman. But you've learned something about it, and you've learned your edge. You've kind of developed an edge in speaking with them and, you know, being able to have a genuinely nice conversation with her without having all of your, you know, mind swirling out of control or whatever. You know, you've developed an edge in that area. In your business, you've developed edges. You know, well, we do it this way because it costs less money and it's more efficient for our customer to get in and get out fast, you know, if it's a fast food place or whatever. Thanks for showing that, Dwayne.
Sure.
In every area of life, you not only have developed an edge, but you must have one in order to live your life well. You have to have an edge everywhere. So you might be fun to take a day and say, or take a little piece of paper and take a look at your life and see where you have an edge, where you've developed edges. That just means a way of doing things that helps you get it done, to be there and take advantage of it. And sometimes the edge is not so easily obtainable. In the markets, gaining an edge can take decades. Seriously, it really can. And sometimes it might take less time. But with good training, with somebody, if you have a mentor or if you have somebody who, through luck or through hard work or a combination of both, has discovered an edge, they can often give you that information, which in many cases might become your edge. And that's a nice thing. That saves you enormous time, could save you enormous time. And I like to think that we've done that with reflected wave and in other ways by giving information out for people to practice trading and improve their edge. You have to have one. You can trade the monkey trade, which is just to throw the dart and say buy or sell. And, you know, maybe you'll do okay with that. And you can also just buy and hold, which has worked well for people for a long, long time. I mean, the markets sometimes crash and all kinds of things can happen, but things can happen to ordinary traders as well, to day traders as well, and to buy and sell people. Bad things can happen. But with having an edge, and part of the edge, of course, is your risk management. So never forget that risk management is an edge. It's not a punishment. It's an edge. It's actually an advantage to be able to get out of a position where in many other investments you can't do that, and you have to sit through whatever hell they're going to bring on you for a little while. So keep that in mind. Remember that. With regard to crude oil, we talked yesterday about crude oil and that any breakout above the previous day's high, that even though this is a really small trade, would have the market running up to 87.27 or somewhere around that area or higher. They have not been able to do that yet, and they did have a pretty good pullback here today. So nothing has changed with that outlook, and the market also tested the critical level we talked about, which was 84.75 or something like that. Whatever it was we gave yesterday, it was right in that area, 84.65, 84.75. They tested that. So they had their big decline. They splashed into that. They tested it. And so now we're at a critical juncture in this market. So even though this is kind of a short-term, small trade, it might require an overnight position. Any further breakout on the upside above the 86.50 level, confirmed breakout, you want to be long. There maybe is, you know, $700 or something on the large contract in this, and then hold the remainder of your position for further advance and let them, you know, learn to trend follow to a certain extent. And you don't have to trend follow to the ultimate top, and you don't have to beat yourself up if you don't get to the ultimate top. But learn to kind of be in and ride that wave a little bit and let the market have a little room to, you know, spend an hour and then close and then move up and move sideways a little bit and continue. Get into that mode with the aggressive portion of your position. And you'll find sometimes that you can do very well with the aggressive half of your position. You should always trade with more than one contract. I'm not a believer in one contract under any conditions. I'm a believer in two contracts from the day you start trading to the day you put it away. Why? Because it solves one of the greatest problems that you'll ever face, which is you. And it solves it by allowing you to get out of your position when you have that initial impact, you know, the emotional thing, oh, I've got to grab this, whatever. But it then allows you to hold on to the remaining position as best as you can. It's a really good thing to practice trying to trend follow a market. Trend following, no matter what you've heard on this radio program from me or anybody else, the system that has made the most money of all other systems is trend following. The system that's the hardest to do, however, is trend following. The system that has the most disappointments is trend following. The system that has the largest disappointments is trend following. So, along with the largest income from it, you also have all these other factors they have to deal with. And so, therefore, people have kind of gotten into other areas of trading. But it is a good skill to have, to learn to hold on to position and let the market sort of let the wave move for a little bit and let them pull back a little bit and do their little thing. And sometimes it's not going to work out, but sometimes it's going to be very good, and you're going to find out that you've got way more than you thought you could. Most people shut off the market long before the market's through giving them gifts. So the gift that the market wants to give you, you know, that's why I've said on the program many times, you may not be capable of making the money you want, not because you're not stopping yourself out and doing the risk management, because you haven't learned how to let the market give you the gift. You haven't ripened into the full allowance that the market may really want to run. And you do that with that aggressive half of your position. And you can be the trend follower there. So this kind of allows you to be both the guy that needs to book something because I'm here, I'm in my office, I've got my home, and I'm trading, and I need to make some money today, and also be the trend follower. And that's why I advocate always utilizing at least two contracts in your trade, because it will allow you to practice being both. And over time, you know, practice does, you know, the best thing you've got going for you is your brain. And after a while, practice starts to pick up, and you can practice and do just about anything in life. Whether you're tightrope walking, you know, the guy that just walked over the, what was that they walked over? Was it Niagara Falls or something? Was that what just happened
that was
a few weeks ago?
Walinda. Are you talking about the original guy?
Yeah, the guy that just recently did it. Was he a relative of the original?
Oh, I didn't even know someone had done it.
But something like that just happened. And that's a very, very, honestly, it's a ridiculous skill to have that. But it could be done with practice. Just about anything can be done with practice, including trading. And there's really no need for mystery in trading. It's just that because there's so many emotions involved and so many other technical factors, if you're technical trading, it swirls itself up into sort of a big mystery. But it really can be, like Dwayne says, very simple. And it can work for you just like life can, if you won't shut it off. And I want you to use that second position to not shut it off. I want you to give the market a chance to give you gifts. And then you'll find that your trading can improve and you can be in on the bigger moves. You can't take credit in the sense of saying, well, you know, wow, I was in this move and I really knew this was going to happen. Maybe you know, we didn't know the move was going to happen, but you were in it, you were letting the market run on that second half, and boom, they popped them up real good and you had a nice trade. And that's all. It doesn't have to be anything bigger than that.
I had a message that just came in on the live chat from Paul. I don't know if he's joking or if this is some recent news. Perhaps it's tongue-in-cheek, whatever that means. Tell David okay. that Obama now only wants to give Bush tax cuts to all but those that earn over $1 million per year.
Okay.
So I don't know.
No, he's not joking. He's probably not joking.
So, I mean, it was 250. Was there like a press conference or something where he raised it to a million?
I don't think there was a press conference. I think if he's reporting news to us, I don't think that's a joke, that he's limiting it to people that make $1 million and over, which helps. And that's much better than the 250,000. Maybe I got it wrong and maybe it was never 250, but
no,
I thought it was.
No, it definitely was 250. I just pulled up an article and it talks about the 250.
Okay.
So that's why I thought maybe he was just joking about the 1 million thing.
No, the million definitely leaves more room for the small businessman to not get have to pay taxes on it. I mean, there really is a very valid argument that you shouldn't be raising taxes on people who are running small businesses and employing the few people that they can employ. This is a bad time. We've had, you know, 48 months, whatever it is, 42 months of 8%+, you know, unemployment. Forget the blame. It's just not a good time to slap people with that.
Paul says he suggested that a few days ago, and Paul, I somehow missed that news. So,
okay, well, that's good information, and I hope that's the case. I really do. One other thing I'd like to see him do, and I know this is a market program, but I just want to say this: another Bush era thing that is going to go away is the death tax. Now, you live your life, you earn your money, you have children. You pay taxes on that money, you live your life with that money, and the little that you can save, you save up over many, many, many years, and maybe by the time you die, there's a substantial amount that you've saved up. And the government wants to come in upon your death and take 60% of that. That's a double taxation. You already paid taxes on that money. You haven't purchased anything with it. You haven't done anything with it. It's just sitting there, but the mere fact that you die means they get 60% of your 25 or 35 years of savings. And the reason they need to go after that money is because they're grotesquely wasting all the other money you've given them along the way. So they have to figure out other ways, like the death tax, to get it from you. You should really write your congressman, I mean, I hate to say this, but you should, and say, I am not going to vote for you if any of that money gets taken from me. Any death tax is completely unconscionable.
Send them a tweet. They'll take it more seriously.
Yeah, to send them a tweet, like, that's good.
Jim asked a question yesterday that I also did not get to. Has the quarterly low in bonds from last year been negated?
I'll need a minute for that, and then we'll see.
And then, Cliff, you wanted to take a look at silver, so I'll bring that chart up.
Quarterly low from last year. I don't know of a quarterly low. I mean,
is
being
that the
negated,
right contract?
I'm not sure I understand his question, and I'm sorry,
Jim. I think Jim might be one of your clients. And Jim, help me here because he asked this question yesterday. I guess you had
maybe he means the quarterly high. Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Is that possible? Is that right, Jim? Yeah, Jim said yes, that's what he meant.
Okay, that's good. That's what I thought. I would say I'm leaning towards yes, although a quarter is a big time frame. But yes, I would say that it probably – it's not that it's been negated. The market had a three-quarter move off of that high, or two quarters down, and a pretty good down move. But I have to tell you, it's a surprise to me that they were able to move through that. A quarterly is a very powerful, very big time frame for the market to be able to move through. And the fact that they did move through it is impressive and practically, to me, unbelievable. It's a really powerful indication that something much larger is at work on the upside. So I think the answer probably would be yes. Now, of course, if this quarter that we're in were to close below, because we did close slightly above it in the April quarter that of this year, but it's not quite enough to really count. But if we do, I would have to say in general, I would believe that yes, it has been negated. For trading purposes, I would look to shorter term timeframes to do something with this. And those timeframes, the market has responded to very well. Like as an example, the last reflected wave weekly bottom in the bond market. And for those of you, I know I realize not a lot of people trade this, but let's just take a look. Was back on the week of March 19th of 2012. And that low was tested in the week of April 2nd just by a tick or two. And take a look at what the market's done since that weekly bottom. That's one of the ways that you would, and that, by the way, I would not have been able to hold for that whole move had I traded that weekly reflected wave bottom on the long side. I would have been out long before they got to where they are now. But that just gives you an example of trading it on shorter term time frames. If the market gives the indication we want to be buying pullbacks into substantially higher prices. And then more recently, the bond market made a reflected wave top on July 2nd, a date that was common to some other markets. And it sold off for several days and then closed above that top on July 9th. So that closing itself was a long entry signal for this market. And, just for this market for today, for this market, we talked about earlier the 150-115 level, and they're trading 151-18 right now. So there's a lot of steam under this market. So I hope that answers that question. And thank you for asking about that, because that was a big deal a while back for us, that quarterly top that they did move through. Had you been short in that, what would you do? Would you just hold and hope they come back? You would use your edge, one of your edges, which is to stop yourself out of a position so that you can be on the right side of the market or not take any trade at all if you're not comfortable with it. Okay, so we moved through crude. We talked about that, the test of the crude level. And then Tesla today, the stock had a nice move up.
Can you look at this chart that I've got up? Cliff asked me to put it up. Silver, do you have any comments on silver?
Let's take a look. Give me just a moment here. Stay with me. Let's see. I don't have anything big on it at this moment. Give me a moment here. Silver has not done anything really wrong. We did have a while back. We did have a monthly bottom due in silver in September of 2011. I realize that's a long time ago, and they had a pretty good bounce off that. They retested that September low in December of 2011, and it was a successful test, meaning the market stayed above that level. And then they tested it again. This is now the third time last month, in the month of June 2012, a year later. And so we're inside the bar, the month that tested it. And so I would say that this is very much at a critical juncture right now. And, we are long in silver, we are long in gold, and we've suffered through this whole position here. We've shown our gold and silver statements, and, we're just going to have to take it as it goes along, because we're trading this like trend followers on the bigger level. So right now, in fact, let me go down to just a shorter term level here and see if there's anything. I don't really have anything. Silver has not rallied very much here, and I don't have anything right now that I could tell you this is what, this is where we'd want to buy or sell. But it is critical. I would say we're at a critical juncture, because we've now tested the September 2011 low three times. So I'd say that's a pretty critical thing. And it's a little scary here, because any break of that level that is confirmed could indicate dramatically lower prices. So is there enough world uncertainty to keep the market up in both silver and gold? I mean, we've had so much uncertainty and we're so used to uncertainty, I'm not sure that the answer is yes anymore. Uncertainty is the new normal. Uncertainty feels normal now. We've had so much of it. Bad news feels normal now. We feel good about bad news now. We feel normal anyway about bad news because we've gotten so much of it. So, sorry, I can't do more on silver for you there, but that's all I have right now. And when I do have it, I'll give it to you. Real quick, Tesla. I'm expecting Tesla to they're coming up and trying to retest the $33 level on the upside. And I like Tesla as a stock. I think you might want to consider owning it as one of your various longer-term holds. It's not a big trading indication to buy it here and sell it there, just as a thing that you hold on to. I like the company. I like their product, et cetera. I mentioned last week that last week was a low. The week of July 2nd was a low in Tesla, and that it was buying territory for a multi-week advance. In spite of the recent declines in the market, Tesla has held up and decently well, and this week they're up substantially from the close of last week, which was $30.99. We're now up at $32.51 and tempting higher. So that's basically that's just a little history and outlook on Tesla there, and I'll give you any other indications that come up with that. I've mentioned this the other day. I'm going to mention it again. September of this year is going to be very important for the crude oil market. So for those of you who did take advantage of the big crash in May in crude, based on the roadmap, this is another roadmap indication is coming up for September. And if a person is good at trend following, they might be able to take good advantage of that and really have a nice trade. We'll talk about that more as the market gets closer to that. And I think, Dwayne, I think that's everything that we have for today. I still like the crude position that we talked about before. We talked about soybeans. It's a short between 1670, whatever the level was I gave the other 2 days, 1670 up to 1702. I know that's a big range, but we're talking about a big top. So we're talking about, you know, multi-week, multi-month decline off of something like this. So keep an eye on that if you have an interest in that. And I would like to invite people to come over today to our Reflected Wave webinar if you have an interest in using turning points. There's many different edges in the market that you can have.
I put the link, guys, in the chat room. So all you have to do is just click that, and it'll take you right to the registration page.
And thank you, Dwayne. I appreciate that.
You bet.
You don't have to have this edge. You can have many different edges in the market. But as far as I'm concerned, the more the merrier. If you understand your edge, then you have an edge. And if you have more than one, I think you're in a better position than a guy that just has one. And for that reason, the turning point is a very powerful, reflected wave is a very powerful tool to give you a very important edge, which is when markets are going to turn. And it also allows you to know when the market is going to advance. It actually gives you price levels as well. It's kind of funny that we have a man that just walked into my office that looks like Warren Buffett for all the world. I'm staring at somebody that looks like Warren Buffett. He's come here to tell me that he did manipulate the market. No, I don't know. It turns out it was an insurance guy. But I'm telling you, if I had just taken a picture.
Does he work for LIBOR Mutual?
I don't know. If I would have taken a picture of that man that just walked into my office and put it and posted it, you would have said, that's Warren Buffett. I turned white. Just a second ago, while I was talking with you, Warren Buffett came in. I thought, okay, I'm in some deep trouble now. Warren Buffett's here. I've got to go.
Warren Buffett's here to learn reflective wave.
Warren's here. Honey, Warren's here. Having more than one edge, having multiple edges is very powerful. It's been very good for me. And in reflected wave, you can do some very clever things, which I'm going to show today in the webinar, how you utilize it. It's not just the simple thing about knowing the turning point. It's also, as an example, knowing if the market puts in a bottom, how long it's going to want to go up. And there's only one way I know to know that, and that's with reflected wave. That means that when the market puts in, say, let's say as an example, a weekly bottom, you would be able to say to yourself, I know how long to hold this position right now, even before the market moves up. Reflected wave gives you that. So it's, and it's just a clever use of the basic technique. So I want to show that to you. And so that's today at 1:30. Go to our website, click on the Traders blog, and come on over. Even if you come before, it doesn't matter if you've been in there before. You're more than welcome to do it. Our next seminar is in October of this year. Normally it would have been a little bit earlier than that, but it's October 6th and 7th of this year. We have some time, you know, between now and then, but I'll demonstrate many, many turning points for you on the show here. And the majority of all the trading that we do in those statements that we show, we try to not show statements where we're doing other things. One of the things about the option statements that we show is that they're almost exclusively reliant upon reflected wave. In other words, larger time frame tops and bottoms that we then trade options off of. It's beautiful. It's a very, very easy way and a backdrop to your other trading that's very comforting because you have this other thing working for you while you're doing your regular trading. Yeah, you know, futures trading, stock trading, et cetera. But in the background, you have these options that are working for you. And Bert will work with you. So it's a little bit of a family thing. We all work together here on the radio station with various different tools and techniques. But Bert, as a broker, can help you and can direct you. And if you want, I can tell you that there's a book by Lawrence McMillan, and he is a not only a friend of mine, but a very astute author. And he wrote the Bible on options trading. It's called Options as a Strategic Investment. It's a mouthful of a title. It doesn't come in a pocket-sized edition. It's a really big book. But you'll learn about options in that. It might be a little too much for some people. It was too much for me, and I had to back off from it and get some basics other places. But I did ultimately get through the book, and I got what I needed out of it. And I'm thankful, actually, for that book because it put me onto the options and it explained very clearly how they work. And you should know that. That's another edge you have is what instrument do you use? You might lose money in the futures market but actually make it in the options market in that same trade because it's a different instrument. It works differently. So there's another edge. So we want to get as many edges as we can, and then we apply those edges day by day, watching the market, practicing our trade, our craft, and working, you know, investing in the markets. That's what we're doing here. So hope to see you guys, everyone here today at 1:30 on our webinar. And, Dwayne, thanks very much for being on the show with me today. And
I enjoyed it very much.
Tomorrow.
Now, tomorrow, keep in mind that we will we'll get the recap done on time, and we'll get you on time, and then we'll be ready to talk to this gentleman that's going to come and be our guest tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds great. Yeah, I believe you'll get me on time when I see it, right?
Well, I did it yesterday.
I know. I'm just poking it. No, that sounds good. I'd be very interested to hear what he has to say. This is a big subject, the subject of brokerages, and if you know how much money you should have there, if you should have it there, what they're doing to protect people. Is there anything they're doing to protect people? You know, what's the story?
So, hey guys, so if you have friends, trading friends, anybody you know that may have been involved with MF Global or the most recent PFG, then by all means come and find out what this fellow has to say and what advice he might be able to offer. And you can visit his website here. I think I already put it in the chat box, but I'll throw it out there one more time if you want to go over. And then come, guys, with your questions. So he'll, you know, go tell his friends that we're, you know, whenever I listen to an interview on the radio, I know it's the proper thing to say, but it's always, when you ask whoever you're interviewing, you ask them a question, it doesn't matter what it is, and their response is, "That's a great question." I guess because I've been on this side of the desk asking the questions for so long. You know, the first couple hundred times I heard it, it just made me feel really smart because I had asked a good question. But now I realize it's part of the spiel that they teach guys.
So you're really not that smart?
I'm not that smart. When you go out on the media circuit to do TV shows and radio shows, that's like, you know, interview 101. Always tell the guy asking the question, that's a great question.
That's like a waiter telling you, great choice. I'll have the pizza with the goat cheese on it. Fantastic choice.
Oh, yeah.
I just wonder if I would have ordered this one, would that have also been a fantastic choice? The other day I was at a restaurant. I thought this was pretty clever. I was in a pretty giddy mood. The waiter came up and he says, are there any questions on the menu? And I looked up and I said, no, they all appear to be statements.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. He went right over his head, though. So, with that, Dwayne, I think I'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks for the questions today. I appreciate the questions. I like to answer, get into questions and all that. So,
all right, dude.
Be back tomorrow and have a great afternoon. See you guys in the morning.
Thanks so much. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, you too.
That's going to do it for us here as well. Don, yes, we will record the interview tomorrow. It will be a podcast. For those of you that, you know, maybe don't know, every day's broadcast is recorded, and you can go to the blog. Just go to the website. And from the homepage of the website, the easiest way to just get there is right here. Visit our blog. That will take you... Now, if you want to see an inventory of all the recent blog posts, then click up here where it says E-Mini Radio Blog, and then you see how you get this whole long list. And by clicking on any one of those, it will take you to the page where that particular show lives. Like, oh, maybe you want to know about realistic trading expectations. You click that. And then once you get there, you just click the headphones right here. And if I've coded it and uploaded it properly, it will start to play. Okay. Now, another thing you can do is you can right-click it, and you can save link as, and you can actually download the MP3 file to your MP3 player, if you would like to do that. Another way to enjoy it is by simply... going to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast. It's free, and we love to have subscribers. In fact, if you have an iTunes account, even if you don't use iTunes to listen to the show, makes us look good if we have subscribers, so feel free to go over there and subscribe. Again, doesn't cost you anything. And while you're there, we'd really appreciate a review. You know, I like the show because... Give us 5 stars, you know, whatever you think is appropriate. John, come on. Thanks for a second day of not seeing my question. John, that's just not true. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. Don't you think that countries like Iran can load up on oil options before they make some significant price or production announcement that manipulates the markets? Well, that was a statement, John. That wasn't a question. So, okay. You know, I apologized profusely yesterday, now again today. Maybe this just isn't going to work out for you. I don't know. You seem to have a bit of an attitude. I don't know why. Oh, well. God bless you, my friend. Come back tomorrow and I'll really try hard to answer. Didn't I start out the show by saying, John, if you'll put that question in again, which you didn't do, by the way, I'll be happy to answer it. So, anyway, you can't please all the people some of the time, or some of the people half the time, or I don't know. We do our best. And I will instruct the bookkeeper to refund his price of admission. I don't know how much he had to pay for his ticket to the show, but I want to make sure he gets comped for it. All right, guys, I'm just fooling around now. I do feel bad about not asking. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the thing, is that we can have an open dialogue and you can ask questions and we answer them and are to the best of our ability, and sometimes we argue about them and whatever. So, anyway, I do apologize. I know you're gone, John, so I'm, you know, talking to the air, but I apologize that I missed that question. I thought it was like a rhetorical statement, so that's why I didn't, but oh well, now I'm just rambling. All right, thanks for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with his grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.